Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Doves. We've been talking about the snubs and doves of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how you doing?
Oh, well, now I'm all warm and fuzzy inside. That was so sweet.
Well, I've spent the last 2 hours here with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd think that you'd be on my nerves by now, but no.
No, I mean, I was silently watching a movie. I thought I would give you, like, the full theater experience by, like, talking kind of quietly but too loudly beside you, annoyingly munching on popcorn at all the worst times.
Sit directly in front of me and go on your phone at full blast.
Yeah. And like aim like my body so that the phone points right at you.
But no, this is you, me, Remy.
Yeah.
Enjoying a little time.
Cat was a little cutie.
Yeah, he was.
Walking around getting pets from all sides.
Couldn't decide who we wanted pets from. Eventually just settled in the middle of us.
What a cutie.
What a guy.
Yeah, how about you, Kyle? How you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's nice to get like fresh off a movie sometimes. Like fresh. Like we just watched this.
Literally turned it off, set up. Now we're here.
Yeah.
5 minutes have passed, really.
Yeah, really. And it's kind of nice. But also because the circumstances of which we had to watch this movie, ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just absurd. This non-streaming, at least in Canada, non-streaming. The Blu-ray release is from Criterion Collection. So automatically there's a little bit of extra cost there. There was a tease of this little Sony Pictures Classic 4K set that I was like, ooh, looks good. Had some cool stuff on there, including this movie in 4K, but it didn't come to Canada. And to get it in the US was going to be like absurdly priced to ship here. So no, not going to pay for that. So I ended up buying the Criterion Blu-ray, which was, you know, still a little expensive, but I got some Christmas money. So I validated
it. It was a good little Christmas present for yourself. Yeah. And like we kept pushing this one back to give them more time to get their act together. But now we're here with like zero time to spare till the end of the season. So we just had to make Kyle and not me spend a lot of money on the movie so that we could sit down and watch it together.
Yeah. And I mean, like I was just hopeful and optimistic that eventually, if there's going to be another release of this, you know, you would think if there's a 4K re-release on at least a disc that there would maybe be a 4K digital release or some streaming push. But no.
No.
And with Del Toro behind this, he's, you know, he's a popular guy. A lot of people like his movies. He's got lots of stuff going on, especially he got a Pinocchio going on this last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we want to get all his movies on streaming services. No.
No. If anything, he's kind of hot right now.
Yeah. But anyways, no. Did you watch anything else this week? Nothing.
Oh, I watched it. Okay, so a little bit. This is what I got going on. Like movie wise, not at all.
Okay,
but girlfriend and I have been watching a lot of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
Oh, great show. So funny. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get one more book in 2022 because we recorded on like the 30th or something, and I said I had three done, and that was probably it for the year.
Yeah.
But that's lame. I wanted four. And my dad just out of the blue lent me two books. One of them was a crisp, like 215 page book. So not too long. Open it up. Oh, that's some big print too. So I got through one more book. I crushed it out in like just a couple hours. It wasn't too long. It was Michael Lewis's Boomerang. It was interesting. It's like this guy who goes around to different areas that are in like different financial crises and breaks down what happened. So it was pretty cool. It was in like Greece, Scotland, other places. It was all right. It was perfectly fine, but it let me get up to four in 2022. That's beatable. That's looking real damn beatable. Yeah. So, but that's it for my media consumption. Kyle, how about you?
Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
I got NHL 23 like right before the year ended.
Oh, a scholar.
Yeah.
A man of taste. Okay, I see.
It was on sale, so I was like, fuck it. And, you know, we played it before, right when the new year starts. And I've dove in deep into franchise mode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I am in there. Like, I'm in like the seventh year now.
How many cups?
And two, actually.
Oh, hey, that's not bad.
And we got like two first overall picks that were like really like stellar. Like, I got two franchise potential players that are just great. But yeah, that's it. That's all I've been doing.
You know what? That's totally fair.
All right. Well, other than that, we did just watch this movie. Of course, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 23, we are talking about The Devil's Backbone or El Espionazo del Diablo.
Ooh.
Jason, had you seen or heard of it before?
I know nothing of this movie until we sat down and watched it. Kyle, how about you?
Neither. Yeah, completely in the dark, other than that it had Del Toro's name on it, and it was like an early film from him. Not his first.
No.
But early.
Yeah.
And I knew that it was in Spanish, And that was about the extent of it. And that it had ghosts. So yeah. That was basically it.
There was devil, there was spines. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, like, I had no idea of like the plot or anything. And honestly, the trailers weren't very telling. I mean, if you listen to the end of last episode, I couldn't even include a trailer clip because there was no dialogue in the trailer.
Oh my
and
God.
Even if there was dialogue, it would, you know, this was kind of dumb of me, but it would probably have been in Spanish. And so for our English language listeners that also don't speak Spanish, that was probably going to be lost on them.
Yeah.
So
this movie, horrifically unpodcastable.
Yes.
It does not lend itself to review mediums at all.
Yeah. Which is like, part of me was like thinking when we were about to watch, I was like, is anyone going to even listen to this episode having not probably seen or heard of this movie before? But ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
I think I wanted to get into this because I was really curious about what it was.
We're here now.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do but have a good episode.
All right. Well, if you were interested in this film, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. It's the only way you can watch it, really. So if you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder, this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation after the plot. We'll do a little talk before that. It's a not spoiler. But if you haven't seen this movie yet and you want to, you can go ahead and do so. I've included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
The Devil's Backbone is a 2001 gothic horror film directed by Guillermo del Toro, written by Guillermo del Toro, Antonio Trashoras, and David Munoz. I'm sorry about all that horrific
Honestly,
pronunciation.
That felt good. I feel like you nailed it, especially Guillermo. Yeah. Which we were trying.
I had to look it up. And like, if the first result's just this robot trying to do it, and we were spitballing better than he did. And then I Googled it, and there was like a phonetic pronunciation that looked way better.
Yeah.
Yeah, put a little spice in there. We're okay, but I'm about to go through the cast list. And we're going downhill. This is starring Marisa Paredes as Carmen, Eduardo Noriega as Jacinto, Federico Lupi as Casares, Fernando Tilvi as Carlos, Irene Vicedo as Conchinta, and Inigo Garces as Jamie. This has a runtime of 106 minutes and was released on November 21st, 2001. Kyle, overall, quick notes. What did you think of The Devil's Backbone?
I had a good time. It was nice. It was fun. It was kind of light and fluffy in a sense.
Yeah.
Until it wasn't. And then it was like really hardcore. And I was like surprised when it had that moment, like when the shock and awe moments of it were hitting. Because before that, it kind of felt like almost like a Shape of Water-esque type movie where it's got this sort of creature, or like in this case, it's a ghost, mm-hmm. and a young boy trying to kind of figure out what this ghost is about. He's not necessarily all that scared of him, but he is scared, but he also kind of wants to understand him.
Yeah.
And then there's that relationship and the kind of mystery behind that. But then it's also got like the whole Civil War aspect behind it. And then the villain was kind of unexpected in a sense, because mm-hmm. before that, you didn't really know who the villain was other than maybe this ghost. And so I really enjoyed the journey of it. I did think it felt a little longer than an hour and 40 minutes, though.
Yeah, it did. But it didn't feel, in my opinion, it didn't feel too long. I actually kind of enjoyed the pacing of it, because mm-hmm. it is like a bit of a darker, less upfront with a lot of the story unfolds slowly, but in a really like in a good slow burn that I enjoyed, that I thought it was well developed to get where it needed to go. Because I feel like if you rush the villain, then he comes off way too cartoonishly.
True.
And if you were just to write down the things he did, he does sound like a cartoon villain with like the level of depravity that he exhibits. But like,
true,
because it takes quite a while to get there, you understand how you got to where you are.
True. Yeah, it was good. Is that like your overall thoughts? You overall had a good time?
I would say compared to The Shape of Water, this ghost, less romantic, less less sensual of a ghost. Yeah.
There was some surprising moments with the eventual villain too, that like it just kept twisting and turning.
Character.
Yeah, it was wild. There was like, I did not expect some of the things that were going on to it. So yeah, I was definitely engaged the whole time, which you know, you can't say a lot about a lot of movies, but I was on board the whole time.
Me too.
Do you want to get into the plot?
Let's dive into the plot.
All right. Well, I'm going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher or you don't want to know, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes, but here's The Devil's Backbone. The Devil's Backbone is set in a small orphanage in a remote part of Spain during the Spanish Civil War. The orphanage is run by Casares and Carmen, who are hiding a large cache of gold to support the Republican loyalists. The orphanage has also been subject to attacks from nationalist forces led by Franco. Carlos, an orphan, arrives at the orphanage and begins experiencing visions of a mysterious entity. He also hears stories about a missing child named Santi, who went missing on on the day a bomb was dropped in the courtyard. As the story progresses, it's revealed that Juanito, the groundskeeper, knows about the hidden gold and is determined to find it. He has an affair with Carmen in an attempt to get her keys and search for the treasure. When the faculty and children decide to evacuate the orphanage, Jacinta starts a fire and several children and Alma, a teacher, are killed in the ensuing explosion. Carmen is also mortally wounded in the fire and dies in Casares' arms. In the final act of the film, it's revealed that Jacinto was responsible for Santi's death and buried his body in the cistern. Carlos has a final encounter with Santi's ghost. Jacinto, however, is killed by Conchita before he can harm anyone else. Yeah, that's it though. That was like, this plot was very brief, and I also didn't read it beforehand because I didn't want to spoil it for myself. Yeah. That one sentence, how he's killed before he can harm anyone else, is like the last like 10-15 minutes.
How did it say that he died?
It just is killed by Conchita before he can harm anyone else.
I thought Conchita was the lady.
Yeah, I think that's wrong.
I think the plot's wrong on Wikipedia.
Okay, well, here's the thing.
It wouldn't have even been the spoiler.
I did the thing again where I put it from Wikipedia into the chat GPT to shorten it. Yeah. And because the Wikipedia one was quite long. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the problem there.
AI is not smarter than humans yet. We understood a movie better than it.
Yes. So if anyone's confused, Jacinto at the end is killed by the children after he tries to capture them when he comes back for the gold.
Yeah.
And brutal armpit stab.
Brutal. Yeah. Top 10 all time of armpit stabs with spears by children into the shoulder of a man holding a shotgun aimed at other children.
Yeah.
Easy on the leaderboard for that one.
Well, I felt that because I got a massage a few weeks ago.
So curious how this relates. Keep going.
And they went and massaged like in my armpit.
Oh.
And I thought for sure like that would be not like a tender area. I was like, whose armpits are sore? Nobody's.
It's so tender.
It's always back in it. It's the tenderest area.
Yeah.
It was fucking painful as shit. I thought I was going to have a nice relaxing massage, but no, this woman went in. I was in pain. I thought I was going to throw up because of how much pain this was.
Oh my God.
And so when this man was stabbed in the armpit, all I could think of like was, damn, that's gotta hurt. Because if a massage is painful in that area, and that's supposed to feel nice,
yeah,
then a wooden stake hastily sharpened by shattered glass
by children, may
by
I
children
add,
into the armpit is not gonna feel good.
Now, there's another key difference, was that Jacinto could not ask for the children to stop. However, you could have just requested your masseuse not do that. How long did she massage your shoulder?
I ain't no pussy. I'm just... I'm not gonna.
Why was she massaging
like,
your shoulder?
Yowchi, sorry,
Kyle. I've had a number, like not a lot. I wouldn't say more than a few. Like I've had a decent number of massages. Right. No one's even looked at my armpits during any of those moments. And if they went over there, I'd be like, "Oh, no, thank you," because that's really all it takes.
Look, she's a quality masseuse, okay? And I appreciate all this other parts of my body that she goes towards.
Yeah,
that was just like I knew. I was like, okay, this is gonna be good for me. I couldn't tell.
Why would it be? When she started going to your shoulder, I was like, oh yeah, there's a reason why no one else has done this before. This must be the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
She knew I was going to watch the devil's back vote. She knew that this moment would be more impactful if she gave me severe pain in my armpit for 2.5 to 3 minutes.
I don't think she likes you. I don't think she enjoys you as a customer. I think that was a sign.
Oh, God. Anyways, that's derailed. So, I found that the overall, like, visual and, I guess, like, theming of this movie worked really well.
Yes.
Like, I feel like it's a small contained story. It's only in that one location, except for one time they go into a town. And, like, the orphanage there and, like, kind of the sets within it were all, like, really well built and designed, and it all kind of allowed to have this mood that worked for this kind of somewhat warm orphanage environment, but also kind of like scary in a sense.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel like a spooky environment, all that necessary, but it did like really fit the whole narrative as well. So I gave the production design team a lot of props because it was great.
This really conveyed a mood very well.
Yeah.
I was also blown away by like, well, there's the bomb part of it.
Yeah.
But once like the explosion goes off, there's a number of dead children and the tone that it strikes where there are just children's bodies littered around.
Yeah.
But it's not like super mournful. It's like a terrible thing has happened, but we have to press on.
Yeah.
And I thought that was conveyed very uniquely, very interestingly, yeah. how you can just have like the bodies of lifeless orphans laying around, yeah. but it's not like meant to be completely like soul crushing.
Mm.
And it just like, it carries on even after that happens. And it yeah. feels like you are in a war where horrific things are happening all the time. But like, yeah. you gotta push on to survive because mm-hmm. someone might steal your gold.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. Like that moment was like pretty impactful, and it kind of came as a surprise.
Yeah.
Because like, obviously, you know, at that point that when Shinto wants the gold and that he's going to get it, but then they're going to leave. And so I thought that maybe he would at least leave together, or that he had enough love for, I forget that girl's name.
Conchita.
Yeah. Not like the older lady, but the younger.
Yeah. yeah.
I thought he had like enough love or interest in her that they wanted to go away together. And so that he would maybe make some sacrifices for that to go with them. But like, to completely just destroy the orphanage and go to try to steal the gold as soon as those are like rumblings, and then just to like come back and then try to keep doing it and keep killing kids. Like, this guy took a turn and he doubled down like yeah. a lot. But also the teacher that was trying to put out a gas fire with a shirt.
Yeah.
You dumb motherfucker. Why? Like, I was like almost wanting to scream at the screen, like, get out. And then like the fucking headmistress, I don't know, Carmen.
Yeah,
one
yeah.
of the yeah the Carmen, when she comes after her, I'm like, bitch, you get out.
Yeah,
and get the children out. If this woman wants to try to put out a gas fire with a t-shirt, then by all means go ahead, try. Yeah. But you should get out of there
yeah.
and get the children out of there, because honestly, that's kind of what led to a lot of people dying. I mean, obviously, the gas trail also led to the car outside, which also affected a lot of people outside. But oof, big mistakes were made there.
Yeah. But also, like, I kind of get it. These people wanted to do everything they could to save children. So I understand the emotional response.
Yeah.
But like, the technology doesn't exist to put that fire out. Just run. Well, you got to wait like 60 years for them to yeah. get like commercial grade fire extinguishers that are even going to do a damn against that.
Yeah, exactly.
Continuing on the theming of this movie being really good, the score works perfectly in this. Mm-hmm. I was very happy with how it all came together.
Me too. And I really liked the design of Santi the ghost.
Yeah.
I didn't really notice it until a while afterwards, but he has this sort of ripple effect around him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives reflections on the walls. And it's because he's underwater.
Yeah.
And so like, it's reflecting like water would when he's around. And so these like ripples, and even his blood effect is like blood leaving his head as he would be drowning. Mm-hmm. So this guy's perpetually like underwater, even though he's above ground. And it's a simple effect, but it's very effective.
Yeah.
And the more I looked at him, the more I realized the layers of that. And I appreciated it more and more, because they could have just done like a ghost, like you see his skeleton slightly through and he's got a scary looking face, and they clearly did makeup on this kid and then just did a little of effects afterwards. But the fact that they went the extra mile to kind of make the sort of effect around him have to do with where he died was really cool to me.
I would say, though, if I'm Santi, I'd be pissed. I would yeah. be so annoyed. Because here's the thing. Oh, yeah, whatever, he got murdered. It happens. But compare his ghost to the old guy's ghost. This True. Poor kid, Santi, he gets turned into a ghost while his body's decomposing underwater with a giant head gash. The yeah. doctor, his ghost gets to be just him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any injuries on him. Where's the point where a body becomes a ghost? Because, yeah, Santi died with a head gash. I get that. But yeah. he died before the body started decomposing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this old dude, he gets his injury reversed when he turns into a ghost. That's not fair. There's got to be some kind of standard here. That poor kid.
Yeah. One scene that was a little bit odd was when they're trying to escape after when Shinto locks them in the room, and they get the kid through the window and he drops down and like sprains his ankle and breaks his ankle.
He breaks it. She dislocates.
Yeah, yeah. That was, it was hard to watch, but then he's just like sat there and he's like, ooh, ouchie. And I'm like, yeah. bitch, crawl your ass to the door.
That's not the worst injury you've sustained today. Get your butt moving.
And they're just immediately like, oh, now somebody else has to go get him.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this guy's going to tie his shoes for a bit. Let's get the next kid through the door.
It was literally like Peter Griffin, like, ooh. Like that sort of levels yeah. of stunned in place and not moving. He literally sat down on a box yeah. and held his ankle. And yeah. they're like, oh, fuck, okay.
Like, this kid sprained his ankle, so he made a literal dead guy go do it. Like, come on, kid, pick it up. It's pathetic.
Yeah. And then, like, almost maybe 10 minutes later, he's using his stick to, like, stab people and walk with. So, yeah. like, he can move. I don't know. Maybe he's just frozen in shock or something.
I don't know. These kids have some weird ways to progress through the story. Because yeah. at the very end, this was another weird one. They're all like, the remaining kids are walking away from the orphanage, going to make this long trek back to the city after having mm-hmm. successfully killed Jacinto. But the kid with the broken ankle, he just has like one really big walking stick that he uses to move. And then there's a kid, there's this motherfucker 5 feet behind him carrying just a small box. Easily could help. They could have found like two walking sticks for this kid instead of giving him like one ski pole. But instead, they got like Joe Schmo just following him behind with like a 2 pound box in his hands, remarking about how this has affected him while his buddy's hobbling around on one leg and one comically large stick for himself. Pick it up.
Oh, man. That's so true. I did find when Jacinto was having sex with Carmen, that came out of left field.
That was a surprise.
Yeah. And then also there was another moment that was surprising where the doctor scoops the preserving liquid that all like the fetuses, like the babies were in, and then drinks it. And we had just sat down with our pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, okay, do not drink that. Do not.
I thought, because he pulls it out in front of one of the kids mm-hmm. and then the kid leaves after being like, no, I don't want to drink that. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
I would never associate with some weird sick fuck who would drink that. So when the kid runs away, I'm like, oh, this guy's just putting it back. Like he was just messing around. There's no way he's going to, oh my God, he drank it. Unforced completely. No one was in the room with him. He could have put it back and just pretended he drank it or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I get the context of that is that because he mentions how people think that it can be like a Viagra.
Yeah.
If you believe in that. And obviously he wants to, you know,
he wants to go believe to
Pound
in that
town with Carmen.
Yeah.
So that Jacinto doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why he swings it back. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I guess so.
It is kind of an interesting point because he's all about like science and how ghosts aren't real. And if you think that ghosts are real, you should drink this because there's that belief. And he's always trying to make the point that it's a fake belief, but people will buy into it regardless. But then he drinks it anyway, so maybe he's buying into that belief. So what does he believe?
Yeah, but he turns into a ghost, meaning that ghosts are a real true thing. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that juice should have fixed up his lower parts, you know? The Viagra thing should have worked by his own internal logic. Hmm.
Good point. I also thought that the kids were going to get away with either the gold or they were going to think to take that the golden juice, basically the stuff that they were selling to make money, because they walk away with nothing, basically, when there's gold bars at the bottom of the thing that maybe they didn't know about. But also that rum was basically unscathed in the explosion because you see it when they go in to get his med kit. So like I thought for sure they were going to have something that would at least help them on the outside other than to be like penniless orphans still.
Yeah. I would say counterpoint to that. I don't think they would know how or to whom for selling the weird fetus juice.
True.
And with the gold bars, if you're living in like a war-torn kind of country, you're probably better off not having valuable things on you or you will be murdered for them.
True, probably, especially as a child, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if they went somewhere with like gold bars, the person they tried to exchange them with would be like, well, these are mine now. You're a child. You are a sickly, thin child. Yeah. You could not fight me back for these. So I think their best bet is the pity and sympathy angle anyways.
Yeah. With any movie that involves a lot of child acting, there's like risks there. Yeah. How did you find the child acting in this?
I thought it was fine. I don't know if I would be as happy with it if I fluently spoke Spanish and could actually have a better understanding of their performance.
Yeah.
But I thought relating what they were doing on screen to me having to read the subtitles, I thought it worked pretty well. I was still quite happy with it. How about you?
I agree. I think they were pretty good. I thought they interacted with each other quite naturally. I do think that when the main kid, Carlos, is like trying to cry at the end, it does seem like he's trying to cry, like he's putting on that face. But he was overall like good for what he was written. And I don't think they wrote too nuanced of a part that would require too much of them. I think a lot of the kids just got mild emotions to deal with and it worked effectively because that was how it was written and it was written very well. And so I think that the writing worked for children actors and the children actors worked well within the writing. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I think they're paired well to make it work anyways.
Yeah. Did you find anything in this predictable at all? Like, could you see where it was going at any point?
I mean, the only thing that I really found predictable was something that was probably kind of intended to be telegraphed, that like once you know for sure that Jacinto kills Santi, like Jacinto is going to be killed somewhere involving Santi. There's got to be some kind of arc to that. So I did expect that he would be killed in the cistern room, but I did not expect how. But when the kids were in the room, like, oh, they're going to be like woolly mammoth hunting this guy, because they have like a class, like a section in the class we talk about woolly mammoths for some reason. Don't know how that's the most relevant lesson, but I get it. They already had the drawing there. You might as well teach the kids about it. But I think that was kind of all I picked up on. Like, major plot points, absolutely not. This took me on a path I did not fully expect. But like, they put so many pieces in afterwards that you can find out retroactively that you know how they got there. Like, Jacinto had been trying a bunch of keys on the vault to open it, but he didn't know which is the right key. So when it cuts to him smashing uglies with Carmen, you understand, like, oh, he's in there partially for the lovin', partially because he's trying to steal keys to try new ones on the vault to get it to open.
Yeah. With that too, I just thought that they mentioned that he was 17 when they first started doing this.
Yep.
A little yucky.
It was a different time.
I guess so. It's still a child. I mean,
it was a different time.
Okay, yeah. Well, you can go around 17, justifying.
Look, you had lived half your life at that age and time when you were 17. You're going through a midlife crisis. That's fine.
Okay. But yeah, I did find that it was pretty unpredictable in terms of like its narrative flow, and it kept me on edge, and I'm actually eager to revisit to see where more seeds were dropped to continue.
Well, I know where Jacinto's seed was dropped.
It is funny you mentioned the woolly mammoth picture, because that literally stood out to me as something that was so odd.
Yeah.
They have a full-on pull-down picture of a woolly mammoth that's like artfully done.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
And literally they must be teaching that because they had the picture. That's the only logic I can think, because why would you really need to learn about woolly mammoths? Other than like a quick lesson, but then I guess that also relates to them poking and hunting in a team later. But
yeah, like clearly you can see story wise where that comes in. But I do love that, like, clearly they just have so few resources that for some goddamn reason they have this thing. So they got to make money out of it. They got to juice this thing.
Yeah, that was great.
What did you think about the acting performances from the adult cast?
Oh, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah,
I do think those were the actually complicated characters. And I think they were conveyed quite well. The main villain guy, Jacinto, like, he was kind of just stoic for the first bit, which made me think that he wasn't going to be the villain, which was kind of why it was surprising near the end.
Yeah.
But then, like, when he kind of starts his like villainous turns, which I guess he was always quite, you know, a little bit devious, but then he kind of like doubles down and you can kind of see the sort of evil in him, and he's just going to kill children or whatever. And like some of the other parts, like, they didn't give that much to do. Like the other young girl who was with the children that he was with, she was like given enough, but like not a lot. Carmen and Casares are given kind of the most, and both of them are really good in it.
Yeah, they're both clearly professionals.
Yeah.
I did think Conchita's part wasn't always great. I think both her character didn't have a lot to do, and the parts that she did do just didn't hit that well until her last scene before she gets stabbed.
Yeah.
I thought she did really well in that scene, kind of putting on the brave face, saying that she's not scared of him, and then immediately getting stabbed and killed. Maybe she should have been scared of him. I don't know. But before that, like, I wasn't really wowed by her performance, just because her character had so little to do. And it didn't, the things that she did do seemed a little stiff. I don't know. But otherwise, like, the main characters who are actually like the meats of this movie are really well done.
Yeah, totally. Well, what did other people think of this movie?
Well, they thought highly, I would say. Rotten Tomatoes, the critics are giving this a 93. Audiences are giving this an 89.
Pretty good. Yeah,
that's pretty good. IMDb is giving this a 7.4 and Metacritic a 78.
Nice.
Where this maybe didn't do so good was the box office. This made $6.5 million. Oh. On a budget of $4.5 million. So there's a return there. It's a small budget, small return kind of thing. It's an artsy fartsy kind of thing.
I'm glad it made like over a few million, though. And it had a $4 million budget. Like, that's pretty good. And they stretched that budget. They used that. Like, it looks like it could be more expensive than $4 million in a sense. But then also, I don't know. It's hard to say, like, because I could feel like as a contained movie, you could also have done this for cheaper. But those effects, I think, were where it came in a lot.
Yeah.
Budget-wise.
Because they did put a little bit of, like, CG work in there when the explosions went off.
Yeah.
So I would say the first explosion in the building was maybe they could have done that better. It did look a little not very well put on the screen.
Yeah.
But the car explosion is better because they just have like a piece fly at you 3D style that kind of cuts to black right away. I think that was a better way to do that. I think they showed too many kids trying to look like they're in an explosion in the first one. And it kind of looked like they were just slipping, but whatever. This did not number at the box office. It's so down low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And, you know, it's hard to say that if this had much of a life afterwards, because you know, obviously it's difficult to find, which means that maybe not a lot of people are searching for it. But I wish, you know, I wish more people would see this because I think it's a good time. And I think there's a lot of people opening up to foreign language films nowadays,
yeah,
which this is in that back catalog. And I think it's well worth your time to check out. And if you love Del Toro, I feel like this is pure Del Toro. Yeah. Like this is his style and his unique vision and his genre just on this scale. And it works mm-hmm. really well.
It is crazy how consistent he is because this movie feels like this could have been like his 13th in his career.
Yeah.
But instead, it's super early.
Yeah. And I think he did Blade 2 after this or Blade 3, which I forget which Blade movie it was. And then he did Hellboy. And so this was kind of like right before he started to kind of break out into where he is today.
Which yeah. is okay. Well, do you want to get to our scores?
Let's get into our scores.
All right, Kyle, I want you to hit me with your enjoyment.
Usually I have more time to think about this.
You don't have any at all.
Usually I have at least like a 4 or 5 days, but you know, I think I'm going to give it a 4. I think a 4. I think it's a high 4. I think it easily could get into 4.5, but I think that 4 is fair. And I feel like in 4.5, 5 territory, that's like getting into really blowing me away. And this has really held my enjoyment. So I think 4 is safe.
I was between 4 and 4.5. I think I am going to go 4.5.
Yeah.
Because I think this is one of the hidden gems of this year for me where I didn't know anything, had no expectations going in, complete blank slate. And I really enjoyed it. It was very tight.
Yeah.
Like it didn't blow me away, but everything was just so consistent in this. And it really held such a good tone that I can't really find fault much with it.
Totally.
What is your craft?
I'm going to give this a 4 as well. I think this is another one that could easily trail into 4.5. I just think like there's like some really key good shots. Overall, it's just like shot pretty competently, though.
Yeah.
And that score is really great. And I've mentioned already that that effect was really good. And I do think it still holds up for, you know, being a 22-year-old movie now at this point. So I think 4 is good.
Yep. I'm also going to 4 it. My only real qualms were like, there are a lot of child actors and like quite young child actors. So the performances aren't going to be flawless.
Yeah.
I also thought it was a little janky in the explosion scene, but that's like really small things. And they did have some really cool effects on the ghost. I thought they did a really cool job, really like unique. And even though the technology wasn't amazing, they just put together a cool concept and executed on it. Yeah. So they didn't need mind-blowing graphics to make it work.
Totally.
So it's good, but not perfect.
Yeah, and what I mentioned before, the production design is really good. Yeah. Like, it really works.
What's your execution?
This is also a 4. I think also, as we mentioned, the children actors is okay, but it's competently written, and it kept my engagement the whole way through because other than the fact that we knew that the villain was going to get his comeuppance, it kept me guessing. I never really knew exactly where it was going to go, and not a lot of movies nowadays can say that. Like, usually you can kind of get a sense of where things are going, but this one just kept turning left and right, and, you know, it wasn't like twisty and turvy in the sense that it was like a huge reveal after huge reveal and it kind of flipped your expectation. It just kept me engaged because I didn't know that was where it was going to go. And that was that I can appreciate that. So I'm giving it a 4.
I'm going to give this a 4.5. Yeah, I was really impressed with how earned everything felt in the movie. Like they have a really unconventional arc for the villain. They have an unconventional storyline you don't see very much. Mm-hmm. And every little bit of it felt completely accurate and earned. Like nothing was a cheap turn for surprise. Nothing really jumped out of you as like a huge revelation. But all of it was just like really little plot points not going the way you'd expect it to go to make like a really promising and delivering endpoint.
So, yeah, totally.
4.5.
Actually, fuck, you've convinced me. And now I'm thinking about it more, like I'm like trying to find the what I really didn't like to lose at a point. And I think you're right. I think 4.5 is pretty safe for that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you agreeing with me. What's your rewatchability?
I'm going to give this a 3.5. I can see myself definitely revisiting this probably near Halloween, I think. It's more a spooky season type of movie, I think. But I can't see a reason why I wouldn't. It's just like not screaming out to me to like go back to it right away.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely. I mean, I own the Criterion now and it's just going to be on the shelf next to me. So yeah, I'll rewatch it.
I'm also going to go 3.5. I could easily see myself rewatching this. I think it's a very interesting movie and it's going to be probably one of the first ones that I come back to from this year.
Yeah, if you can. If you can find it anywhere to watch
it.
Well,
I'll just steal it. It's fine. I know where one is and I know where you live. I'm there right now. All right, Kyle, that's going to bring you to a 16 out of 20 for an 80%. And then it's going to bring me to a 16.5 out of 20 for an 83%, which means it's the ranking time. Kyle, right now, your ranking is Lord of the Rings, Amelie, Donnie Darko, Memento, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, Training Day, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, The Man Who Wasn't There, Sexy Beast, The Others, Black Hawk Down, Mulholland Drive, Hedwig, AI, Spy Kids, Monsters Ball, Gosford Park, In the Bedroom, Ghost World, and Moulin Rouge. Where does the Devil's Backbone go?
Now, like I said, again, usually I have more time to think about this. It's definitely going to be in my top 10. Trying to decide where, though. I can't decide if it's over or under Training Day. I think it's going to be over.
You're going to go above Training Day and below Shrek.
I think so. I'm trying to compare the two right now because they're so close.
Yeah.
I'm looking in that area. Like, I don't think it's better than Shrek, but I do think it's around in that same area as Training Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's like a safe, like 7A, 7B.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think I'm going to edge out the Devil's Backbone as 7A. So
7A.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to put that pretty much in a close, but not the same place. I'm going to go number 6.
Nice.
That's called the 7AA, which is 6. And that is going to bring my ranking to Lord of the Rings, Donnie Darko, Amelie, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, The Devil's Backbone, Training Day, Memento, The Others, Sexy Beast, Harry Potter, Moulin Rouge, Ocean's 11, Black Hawk Down, In the Bedroom, Mulholland Drive, AI, Hedwig, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World, The Man Who Wasn't There, and Monsters Ball.
Nice.
All right, well, are you ready for some fun letterboxed reviews?
Yes, because I'm curious as to if they're even going to make sense.
Yep. Well, so here's the thing. We did all the prep work before. Normally, yeah, we watch the movie and then do the prep work after so that we can understand better what's going on and so we don't spoil it for ourselves.
Yeah.
However, we didn't have the luxury today. So I tried to grab reviews that I thought were good, maybe. Mm. And one was from reading the review. It had the candor of it being a joke, but it made no sense. So I'm like, well, I'm going to put it in. Maybe it makes sense after the movie.
All right. Here we go.
So Kyle, you're gonna it's the last one, so okay. You let me know if it makes sense. Yeah, now
doing a live.
We'll say overall, this is an artsy film. The review sucked.
Oh.
Everyone that was having an English class written essay in the comments. This has a 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Pretty good.
We're gonna kick it off with Ben Peterson, 4.5 stars. The only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good ghost with a grudge. Jaxie, 4.5 stars. Guillermo at his most Del Toro.
True. This is actually very pure Del Toro.
Just right down in his lane. He's driving home on his own road. He knows where he's going. And lastly, 300 Days of Horror, 2 stars. If I were a slug collector, I'd say I was a few slugs short on this one. Way too long.
Way too long. It's only an hour 40.
I know. So, slug collector. They did collect slugs in this movie.
Yes.
But they don't talk about it much. It's just something kids are doing.
Yeah.
I don't fully follow that comment.
Like, one puts one in the box at the start of the movie, and then it goes into his box later, and I think he forgot about it because it didn't look like it was still living.
Nope. Okay, let's break this down. If I were a slug collector.
Right.
Okay, he's putting himself in a hypothetical. He collects slugs. That's his job.
Yeah.
I'd say I was a few slugs short on this one. That's not enough slugs.
Mm.
What he's saying is we needed more slugs, but it was too long. So what we needed to do was cut screen time of the plot narrative and add back some screen time of more slugs getting collected. I think that's what we're going for. Okay, I see where you're going with that. 300 Days of Horror. I can sign on to that. Award details, Kyle.
No.
He's got
no
nominations, and it won none of the no nominations.
Lame.
For other notable awards, Kyle, no.
Oh.
I couldn't find anything.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
There was nothing anywhere about this movie.
Mm.
So if it won awards, they're hidden.
Yeah.
They're secret awards. They won ghost awards. Not real ones, though. Which is too bad.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised I didn't see anything about, like, you know, like Spanish movies or.
Well, I was just thinking because The Others also came out and that was a Spanish horror movie, but mm-hmm. it was in the English language and not in Spanish.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know, maybe because The Others had a wider appeal, it got the edge up on just being more awarded because more people saw it outside of Spain and in Spain. But then, like, this, I don't know, because it's Spanish, I thought that maybe,
yeah.
And it's about the Spanish Civil War, like.
Yeah, maybe they're just trying to forget.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to talk about that anymore. Yeah. It was pretty sad. All right, interesting facts. This was another one where I put stuff in here, not knowing how interesting it might be. Some of these actually ended up being more interesting as a result of that.
Awesome.
We'll start it off with something kind of interesting. The film's title refers to the medical condition of spina bifida.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's something.
This was strongly inspired by the director's personal memories, especially his relationship with his uncle, who supposedly came back as a ghost.
Interesting.
Yep, that's a weird one.
And we laughed at the end because it said to my parents.
Yep.
In a movie about orphans.
Yeah. Usually flexing on these kids. Like, look what I got, the losers. But also, it was dedicated to his parents, but his uncle was the ghost.
True.
You'd think you'd want to maybe throw your uncle a bone and say, hey, this is for my ghost uncle, not for my still living parents.
Yeah, now you're just pissing off your ghost uncle more, and you're pissing off orphans.
Yeah. You don't want to piss off ghost uncles. They got way more powers than normal ones. In order to make Fernando Teillevé cry, if he was unable to, Guillermo del Toro would complain of his acting skills out loud and express his disappointment with his work.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Yep. Who did he play? Oh, Fernando Teillevé did play Carlos the child, the small little boy.
So I figured that was the case. So Del Toro's just on set, just brutally criticizing a child to make them cry and to get a valid performance out of them.
And you know what that kid got for that? He got some fuck named Kyle going, well, I didn't really believe him when he cried. He was crying, Kyle. He was crying. That was his real cry.
Oh, God.
And you didn't even like it. You should be telling him his acting sucks.
I think Del Toro hates children, especially orphans.
He really does.
Because he's screaming at this kid who in this movie plays an orphan.
Yeah.
And then at the end says to my parents. So he's just trying to shit on orphaned kids and just kids in particular.
Unbelievable. All right. The Criterion Collection DVD and Blu-ray release of the film has the spine number 666.
Oh, damn. I should have noticed that.
Yeah.
You know what else it has? A weird backwards bolding for the subtitles. Like, Jason, enlighten me. Enlighten me.
Okay.
When one of the options, yes or no, is bolded, which do you think that is?
The one that I'm actively clicking on. Yes. That's the one I am hovering over and about to select.
Right. No.
No.
Incorrect.
No.
Apparently to the 666 Criterion Collection Blu-ray, The Devil's Backbone by Guillermo del Toro, bold means not pick.
Bold means you are not currently hovering over this option. You are on the non-bolded one.
Because, like, first of all, I know you like subtitles, but also I knew this was a Spanish language film. So I'm like, okay, well, let's make sure subtitles are on.
Yep.
And so I go there and I check and I was like, oh, it's no. So let's go over to yes. No.
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 We start a movie. It's in Spanish. We're like, fuck, no.
Fuck, the devil's back words. God damn. And I think lastly here, the design of the ghost was inspired by the white-faced spirits of Japanese horror films like Ju-on and Ringu.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Cool.
Kyle, do you have any last thoughts on The Devil's Backbone?
I wonder if there's an orphan that Guillermo del Toro could love.
Batman?
Maybe.
Did he ever do a Batman?
Oh,
it's not too late.
It's not too late.
That would be a fun one.
Maybe he said no to Batman before because he hates orphans. An orphan,
no.
What about you?
Disgusting.
Any final thoughts?
This movie is or fun.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for listening to season 3, episode 23 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this film or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle's Bison on Twitter and Jason's at Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Please leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
Roz, you're looking fabulous today. Is that a new haircut? New makeup. You've had a lift. You've had a tuck. You've had something.
Ah! We've always been afraid monsters were there.
Scary feet, scary feet, scary feet. Oh, the kid's awake.
Waiting to scare us.
Twins and a bunk bed.
But what we didn't know is that we scare them.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Monsters, Inc. So make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.
Mike Wazowski, you forgot to file your paperwork again.